3, 2, 1. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the Signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the NWO, the man behind the 83 weeks of dominance of WCW. He is the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP.
Now, you said something to me off air. I was shocked by this. I was saying NWO is the best storyline of all time. I love the Mega Powers exploding Hogan's average. You said probably the Bloodline. Why do you think the Bloodline over some of the greatest feuds of all time or the greatest storylines of all time?
Well, it's right up there. You know, the NWO could never happen again because you can't, nobody's going to cross. And when that happened, the internet wasn't as strong. People actually thought they were being invaded. McMahon and Steve Austin is right up there too, but they were down. And I go back to what we said last week. People, it's very reminiscent of Rock. When Rock got there, Rocky sucks. Die, Rocky. And then Roman sucks, right?
Yep.
Now he's so entertaining, but all of them are so entertaining. The Bloodline and Owens, Cody, and Kevin, Owens, Cody, and Sammy, and maybe Jey Uso, they get an onion layer that peels off, and there's all kinds of intermingling stories. I mean, they're coming out of this with all the guys being elevated. When we were doing the NWO, we were elevating the NWO tremendously, but the babyfaces had to go down. This one, everybody's being elevated. Whoever had the seed for this deserves an award. This was spectacular.
So it started under the Vince regime, obviously, when Vince was booking. That's when this all started. But obviously, they said Roman has a lot of creative input. Paul Heyman has a lot of creative input. And then Michael Hayes is kind of like the lead, has a lot of input on it as well, Michael P.S. Hayes. So then you throw in Triple H and what he's doing with the booking and him, you know, giving guys like Drew the big push and Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens again, and obviously Cody Rhodes getting this big push. It's kind of like a group of a couple really smart guys, Triple H, Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns, and Michael P.S. Hayes.
Absolutely, and I know Michael very well, and I know Paul very well. Two brilliant guys, obviously, aren't this smart. And I'm glad to hear that Roman is that smart. And it's kind of hard not to be. In Roman's case, when you're second generation, you've been around it your whole life, you've seen everything, you've heard your dad talk about angles and everything else. This is really entertaining. And that thing with Sami Zayn, do you know he got a 5-minute and 22 ovation before they ever touched?
Pretty awesome.
It's the longest one for any sporting event in the history of that building.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I remember Hogan when he went into Canada in 2002. Supposedly, I don't remember where exactly it was, but it was a 22-minute ovation for Hogan. It was nuts. Like, they wouldn't stop. And every time he would go to talk, they kept cheering it. They wouldn't stop. Wow. But that was his return to WWF. I mean, it was a lot of emotion into it. But the Sammy thing is damn impressive. If I'm putting him in the same category, even in, you know, the same breath as Hogan. So, I mean, it's pretty good.
Yes, it is.
When you look at the Bloodline and Sammy and Cody and this whole thing, would you have Roman lose? I mean, they're on such a roll. Would you even think about having him lose the title?
This is just me, okay? I used to have in the Keys, I had a couple of boats. And every time I went out to start my main boat, it would turn over, but I had to do it a couple of times, right? And I'd say to myself, well, I got to get it down, get it tuned up. I bring it, they tune it up, I take it out because it goes on the water where I got it tuned up. I take it out, and I get halfway home and it breaks down. I learned if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Good point.
They're running whatever. They've pushed a year and a half ago when they were down to nothing? They've pushed the snowball uphill and it's starting to roll down. I hope they didn't forget how I was to push that snowball up. It's on its own now and it's rolling. And that's not knocking anybody, but when you have these houses and these ratings, means the people are buying into it, and maybe it hasn't topped out yet.
Did you see the post conference after the show? I don't know if you heard it or saw of it. You know, the guys come out like Triple H, almost like a sporting event, almost like he's Dana White. He answers questions. Did you see that?
I saw a little of it.
They actually asked him, Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics, a buddy of mine, he was asking about the sale of WWE and kind of caught Triple H off guard for a second. But it's one of those things where I don't know if you're Triple H or if you're WWE right now, the creative is so good. You don't want to sell it and then have some sort of creative mix up and have somebody else come in, because right now they're on fire.
This is just me. And I have no idea their inner workings. They're talking about $9 billion now, right?
Yes.
We talked about last week when we were talking about six, right?
Yep.
It's nine now. If somebody buys it with that kind of money, and what you said, it's on fire, I don't think they're going to change the creative in that office. I think there'll be rounds. Whenever if it's ever sold, someone's going to come to them and say, that's smart. we can't change these guys in the office. We got to let them do what they do. And most smart bosses surround themselves with guys that are very smart on the business they've acquired.
So it's almost like, hey, we're going to buy this thing, but we're going to keep the structure in place that's successful for the WWE right now. We don't want to mess up the success.
Well, that's just you and my opinion. That doesn't mean anything, but I would think when they see what they've done in the last year and a half, I would hope to that they wouldn't change it.
That's like the Endeavor Group when they bought UFC or whatever the initials are of the company that bought UFC. They didn't change anything. They kept Dana White in charge, and he kind of is running it like he would always normally run it or had run it.
And he got by with a big no-no, and it kind of just drifted off in the ether where everybody else gets canceled, right?
Yep. And it's pretty funny that he slaps his wife, and then he has a show called Power Slap where it's all about slapping people. So it's like that show shouldn't even exist because of what happened, but it's still out there.
Right, right.
That was crazy. I mean, that's a different story for a different day, but that was crazy. Have you ever seen that Power Slap? Did you ever watch that?
No. But I got an idea what it is because I think they got that from a European show. You know, that was kind of a big thing in those Eastern countries.
Slapping each other?
Yeah.
Wow, weird.
Yeah, it's like a sport over there in some of those Eastern countries. I've seen YouTube clips on it a long time ago, 2 years ago.
Because that's what they're trying to do here. Like, they're having competitions. Whoever wins these competitions get put into this house where they all have to live together. And then they try to create personalities for this guy. Like, well, one guy is, like, skinny. He was poor. He kind of looks like Jesus. So they call him Slap Jesus. And, like, you know what I mean? They, like, try to give these guys a gimmick almost. Like it's wrestling or like it's UFC. And then they're like, oh, the big tournament is coming up. And, you know, the two welterweights are going to face off each other. It's the number one seed against the number eight seed. And, you know, the number one seed is, like, this kind of this jack guy. And he's all pumped up, and the other guy who's the eighth seed is like the skinny little wimp, and he slaps him and he just pisses the guy off, and the guy turns around and slaps him and knocks him out. I mean, it's just very gimmicky, but it's just so weird. It's like, wow, that's on TV. They're just slapping each other.
JP, content. How often do you go through a complete show?
Not as often as probably should, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I've only watched 1 week of it, and I was just like, wow, this is just so, like, absurd. I haven't watched it again, but it's just so absurd. It's like, wow, I think the guy was concussed. Because, you know, like, when you get knocked down and you have, like, they call it fencing or whatever, you're, like, you're frozen.
Yeah.
A few of the guys, that they were like that. I was like, wow, are they, like, promoting CTE here or what?
That's a good one. We'll know when the advertisers come out, right, if there's a bunch of doctor ads.
Yeah, and then they have females doing it, too. They have girls doing it. I was like, oh, my God.
God.
And they were saying there's no clubbing because sometimes you can miss the slap. You know, you get, like, that part of your wrist, where you really can do some real damage. You're like, oh, there's no clubbing. Guy by accident clubs the one guy, knocks him out. It's just like, man, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Weirdest thing. I mean, who knows? But the ratings for it are terrible. They were, I think the last ratings that he had were 275,000. That's it.
Wow. But, you know, maybe it's absurd, you know, especially in this time that we're in, you know, with two different thought patterns in this country. Do you know what I mean?
I could see that. Definitely.
Well,
it's a weird time.
Person in Congress just said that the country should be split.
Yeah, that was a weird thing to say. Yeah, divorced, right? She said divorce. That was
strange. Yeah.
Thought we were supposed to be bringing everybody together. Why are we bringing everybody apart?
And the people that are in the states that I don't want to get political because it's crazy. That are on the other side, they're not going to be able to vote. I mean, you heard that, right?
Yeah, it just gets too much. I mean,
yeah, and it's just, they're doing wrestling. They're doing wrestling promos.
Yep. It's crazy out there. But let's get to the topic at hand. Let's talk about Super Brawl 2, which was held on February 29th, 1992, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Miller High Life Theater. The attendance was a little bit over 5,000. The tagline, best friends, now bitter rivals, brawl for it all. The pay-per-view buy rate, 160K. So not bad here for Luger and Sting. A little bit on the uptick, especially in 92 when, you know, Flair's not there and basically, it's kind of like, is Luger on his way out? Yes, he is. So, you know, 160K is pretty good.
I think it's excellent.
And we talked about this before. They weren't in 100% of cable pay-per-view providers in 1992 either. So,
right. And this is before the NWO.
Yep.
Or Hogan. So this is excellent.
Yeah, I agree. Now here, I know we've talked about him before, but Kip Allen Fry is in charge. Did you have any sort of dealings with him? Did you know him at all or no?
Just a little before I left.
What was his, like, is he a lawyer? I know he's technically not like a real executive. Like, he's not like a CEO type. Like, wasn't he a lawyer or something?
He was a lawyer in the North Tower, yeah.
Well, that's so funny. How does that make him anything with wrestling? You know what I mean?
Well, they had a couple before him, too.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing with WCW. It's like, yeah, put Jim Herd in there. He doesn't know anything about wrestling, but let's see what he could do.
Yeah, and they had another guy in between them.
Oh, yeah. I remember to try to figure out who that was. There was another guy, very short run, but yeah, I always forget his name. Drops out of my head. But the thing here with Kip Allen Fry was trying to do something different. It is said at this point, that he's, you know, trying to help them creatively and financially. So he's saying he's going to start issuing initiatives for whoever is awarded the best match. I don't know who decides who had the best match, but he's going to offer $5,000 bonuses to wrestlers who put on the best match of the night. I don't know if that upticked the match quality or not. Do you think that's a good idea, bad idea, or is that just silly?
No, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's like the winning football team gets the guy gets the game ball, right? $5,000 is nothing to the NFL stars. Back then, you know, that was a nice payday.
Yeah. It could, I guess, incentivize the guys or get them motivated to kind of want to put on better matches for the crowd. Like, hey, I'll win an extra $5,000, you know, towards my paycheck at the end of the night. I mean, it could work, I guess.
I guess it could. You know, it's not a bad idea. You can always stop it.
So the last pay-per-view they had was Starrcade, which was Starrcade in the end of 1991. This is, of course, February of 92. But Sting knocked out Luger to win Battle Bowl, which kind of sets up this match, the title match later on in the evening. Lex Luger, who's the WCW champion, against Sting. Now, the thing here about Luger is he's on his way out. What do you think about him doing business on the way out, losing to his best buddy, Sting, of course, but him doing things, you know, the right way. And we'll get into the main event later, but you know what I mean? Like, he's on the way out. He's the champion. You got to lose the title, right?
And they're best buddies. And, you know, it's was an unwritten rule that that's what you're supposed to do. He did business the right way. Like Lex.
What do you think about him wanting to leave? Like, is that okay to you? Do you think, like, stick around, Lex. We're building something here. 160K, maybe we can build something here.
Well, you saw what they did with him when he went over. He had his own shows, right? Remember that was when Icapro was around?
So, technically speaking, he's on WrestleMania 8, which is, you know, April of 92, but he doesn't wrestle for, you know, for almost a year, I guess, technically, because of his contract with WCW. They let him out of it, but he was in the WBF, like you said, the IcoPro, whatever, that kind of stuff. So he's in the World Bodybuilding Federation, but he's not in the WBF as a wrestler. So he's leaving WCW to be like the face of the WBF and then eventually be a wrestler in WWF, but that's not for another year.
Yeah, and I'm sure they gave him a great deal to go over.
What do you think about that, though? Bodybuilding? Like, you're a wrestler, Lex. What are you doing here?
Well, he had a great body. And maybe, you know, Vince was always a body guy. And maybe putting him in that show for a year, it's sort of like they did Backlund, remember? They brought Backlund in for a year just for TV, over a year. They exposed him in a different way. Maybe it was, they were hoping that bodybuilding show was going to catch on and they bring some crossover people.
That's I just saw some awful WBF thing where this guy comes out, you know, he's jacked to the nines and he has a fake gun. And it's like, I guess, supported their big event. And there was ninjas in the crowd and he was pretending to shoot them with the gun. Oh, it's so bad. I was like, oh my God, no wonder WBF failed. It was just, I don't know, it was just such a corny idea. And I don't know if people that into bodybuilding as far as like making it into a pay-per-view event and stuff. It's just.
Well, I personally don't think so, because I think it was kind of sort of ahead of its time. I don't even think they have pay-per-views now for bodybuilding, do they?
No, they just have big shows like Arnold Classic and stuff, yeah. But nothing like pay-per-view wise, no.
Mr. Olympia, they've shrunk. Yeah. Their audience has shrunk, believe it or not.
Yep.
People are training more, but not many people are still trying to get jacked to death.
To me, though, Luger, I don't know, I guess it's like a slippery slope, or you know, maybe I could be wrong, but it's almost like he wasted a year of his prime, years, kind of sitting on the sidelines and being in WWF because of the contract with WCW. He couldn't wrestle for the WWF until 93. So I don't know. To me, it just felt like he might have wasted a year of his prime.
Well, I know what you mean. But this guy is paying you all this money. He promised you everything. So you're biding your time for the year. And he thought he was going to get the big brass ring, right?
Yep. And we've talked about this before. Man, Vince screwed up his booking like crazy. Even here in 92, I guess Ole is still technically booking. Flair's gone, so he's not there. Dusty's making his way back. But as far as like booking the shows and stuff, it's like, wow, they even knew what to do with Luger. He was great as the champion here. He was a big draw on the show. I mean, they did a pretty good buy rate here. So it's one of the things where it's like he wasn't like he was being booked terribly and went to WWF. He was booked pretty damn good, left WWF, was booked like shit, then comes back and is booked great by you. So Vince just didn't know what to do with him.
And I think the world title match was at Yokozuna?
Yep. Yokozuna, yep.
No finish?
Yep.
After that year run?
And the confetti and everything and the songs and the balloons came down from the ceiling when the guy won on a count out. It was like, what are you guys so excited about? He didn't win the title. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Terrible. Awful. But here in 92... Shivani and Eric Bischoff together at the announce desk, not to call the show, but to give you some pre-match hype. They go to the back, and Missy Hyatt is in the back. We go back to the ring, and Jim Ross brings in the debuting, his new partner, his new color commentator, Jesse the Body Ventura. Jesse the Body debuts in WCW. Pretty big catch here for WCW.
Huge, huge. I mean, look what Jesse has done in his life. You know?
Yeah.
He won a governorship from two guys. He went against Hubert Humphrey, who was the vice president's son, and then another guy who was the mayor of either St. Paul or Minneapolis. I don't know. And he kicked their ass on the debates. I mean, an independent winning a governorship?
Nuts.
Yeah.
He was last seen at WrestleMania 6 in, of course, April of 1990. Gone after that, he makes his WCW debut here, riding a motorcycle to the ring and got a huge pop. He looks at JR, who wasn't wearing cowboy hats at this point, so maybe this kind of put a light bulb in JR's head, but the body says to JR, you know, if you wore a cowboy hat, you'd look just like JR Ewing. So I just thought that was funny. It's like, oh, maybe he put something in JR's head there to start wearing cowboy hats.
Maybe. I never I never heard that line, but maybe.
So as far as 92, where are you here? I know Wing, FMW, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but you're not a part of WCW. Are you, you're just kind of, you're wrestling everywhere. I mean, you're traveling basically from Japan to, you know, the Memphis area and the surrounding area in Louisville.
And I was in ECW, and I was working independence with Terry Funk and Eddie, the late Eddie Gilbert.
Do you check in to see what's going on in WCW? Because I know you were here, then gone, here and gone. I mean, you're kind of going back and forth. Do you check in on them or not really? You're too busy.
Not really. I'm too busy.
So as far as JR and Ventura is concerned, it's on paper, it sounds awesome, but JR has even said this about himself, that for some reason he didn't give Ventura enough. Like, you know, with Lawler, he'd give him stuff, you know, they'd lay stuff out together. They were just great chemistry. For some reason, he said he had his guard up with Ventura because Ventura is such a big name. He just, I don't know, he said he felt more guarded. Ventura even said he was better with Schiavone than what he was with Jim Ross. So what do you think it is with JR and Ventura, chemistry-wise, not being as good as they should have been?
Well, I don't want to put words in Jim's mouth, but you said in his book he said that. Well, Jim hadn't gone to Vince yet, right?
Yep, not yet.
And here's a guy that did all the WrestleManias, huge personality, and he's sitting right next to you in dreads and beads and earrings and every other thing. Tough. If you've been a lead announcer.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like, wow, this is like the dream team. You got the best play-by-play guy and maybe the best color commentator of all time, but they weren't as great together as maybe they could have been. And JR admits it, Ventura admits it. You know, something was a little off between them. It could be exactly what you said, but it's funny. If you go with Vince, Vince and Jesse were awesome together. Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse were awesome together. Schiavone and Ventura are great together. So it's one of those things where it's interesting because JR is awesome with Dusty. He was awesome when Magnum was with him, Terry Funk, Gordon Solie, when he was with Schiavone, Bob Caudle. I mean, the list goes on. For some reason, Jerry Lawler, him and Lawler might be the best. For some reason, him and Ventura didn't click.
Well, I think Jim laid it out in his book. He was guided. So
we're going to start off the evening, not with the pay-per-view as of yet. We'll talk about the dark match. Big Josh defeated Diamond Dallas Page in about 7 minutes and 30 seconds. Okay, dark match here to start the show off. Nothing much. I guess giving Big Josh a chance. Big Josh, of course, your buddy Maniac Matt Bourne.
Yeah, Matt was a great wrestler.
What do you think about that gimmick, Big Josh, though?
I didn't like that. I mean,
he's a lumberjack. He's got the bears. I mean, it's a weird gimmick.
Yeah, and Matt Bourne drew money, especially when he was with Buzz Sawyer in Texas. I used to go to Texas from Florida, me and Mark Lewin, to wrestle those guys.
And it's funny here, it's like, okay, Big Josh is such a weird gimmick, lumberjack gimmick. Had to be like an executive thought this up and thought it would be a good idea, a good gimmick. WWF gets their hands on him about a year later. And he's Evil Doink, which is just one of the coolest gimmicks to me. Not Babyface Doink. Babyface Doink is corny, and obviously that was Ray Apollo. But the heel Doink, even when he was doing Born Again in ECW, when the paint would just fall off his face and he just looked nuts, like, that's such an awesome character. He's like a psycho clown. It's like the Joker almost.
It, right?
Yes. Yep.
There is a phobia from some people with clowns.
Big Josh, though, I don't know. I'm not feeling the gimmick. I didn't think that thing. I didn't think that worked.
I'm not feeling it either.
And obviously, 92, this is very, very, very early on DDP, who had way too many gimmicks going on. And he didn't understand what he was doing as of yet.
He had a fur coat on. He had a hubcap around his neck. He's smoking a cigar. He had the girl. He was tap dancing. Whoa.
He's got too much going on, DDP. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, you kind of said it to him best. When he stripped down all that stuff, it's when he got the most over. He literally was wearing jeans, and he was the most over guy.
Yeah.
So the first match of the evening, it's a good one. It's for the WCW World Light Heavyweight Championship. Brian Pillman defeats Jushin Thunder Liger in 17 minutes. And to me, a 5-star match. This was awesome. I think Meltzer almost gave 5 stars, not quite. But to me, just an awesome awesome match between these two. They just had awesome chemistry. Obviously, you knew because 3 years later, you're going to book them for the first ever match in WWE Nitro history. Yeah. But what do you think here? Pillman and Liger tearing it down, getting 17 minutes to start the show.
I didn't see that match, but I had heard about it. So it was by no accident that I booked it as the first match ever. Because the other thing was, everybody had heard, not everybody, but a lot of people had heard about Liger. And he had some experience, I mean exposure, in the U.S.
And it's great that Pillman can go hold for them. You know, if they're doing submission, I mean, he could do some high-flying stuff just as well as Liger. So it was great to have this back-and-forth matchup with two polar opposite guys, but almost so similar in certain aspects of wrestling. So, I mean, perfect chemistry with these two.
I've said this 1,000 times. When we lost Brian Pillman, not only did we lose a great performer, when we talk wrestling feuds, there would have been no first except Pillman and Austin. That might even surpass Vince and Austin. And then, because he was so smart, we lost a very creative guy. I had the world of respect for Brian.
It's crazy to look at him feuding with you in 95 and 96 versus him here.
Yeah.
Completely different. He's a white meat baby face. Yeah. He's like the high flyer. He's flying Brian. He's just a great wrestler. But it's funny, he understood he's got to have a character. If he wants to make quote-unquote Hogan money or, you know, get involved with Hogan, he needs character. And look what happened. Hogan wanted to work with him because, like, this guy's character is awesome.
Yeah, and I want to beat him.
Yeah. Of course. So your winner and new light heavyweight champion, flying Brian Pillman in a great match. Then they cut to the back. Missy Hyatt is interviewing Terry Taylor, who is doing his tailor-made man gimmick. If you've ever seen this, he basically is dressed up like Million Dollar Man with slicked hair. Yeah. It was such a ripoff. It was crazy. Like, almost to the point where WWF could, like, sue them and say, hey, tailor-made man, Million Dollar Man, he looks exactly like, and they're doing the same gimmick.
Do you know why I think they didn't?
Why?
Who was DiBiase a ripoff? Flair.
Or Vince in real life, as a lot of people have said.
Yeah, the Million Dollar Man, but he was a ripoff of Flair, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this is when they didn't start suing until they started to get beat, right?
Yep. It is funny, though, through the years, like you had DiBiase doing that gimmick, then JBL did that gimmick, and then Del Rio kind of did that gimmick. They all did the same gimmick, but they all recognize it. Like, JBL jokes around and says, thanks, Ted. But he was obviously a mix of Stan Hansen, too, but it was like, thanks, Ted, for the gimmick. And Alberto Del Rio's like, hey, I stole JBL's gimmick, but it's nice to keep that going if it's in the same federation. When it's in WCW and you're WWF, it's like, that comes off as like a cheap ripoff.
I agree with you.
So then we have Marcus Alexander Bagwell versus the aforementioned Terry Taylor. Marcus Alexander Bagwell defeats Terrence Taylor, the tailor-made man, in about 7 minutes and 30 seconds here. Okay, match. Nothing crazy or to write home about here, but it's just interesting to note that he's Terrence Taylor, the tailor-made man, which is kind of ripoff. And this is early Bagwell where he's Marcus Alexander Bagwell. He's kind of the corny, white meat, baby face, Sting's my mentor kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't think Terry needed that.
Did you see anything with Bagwell at this point when he was a young, completely green guy? Did you see potential in him?
Yes, I did, Bagwell. I sure did. I sure did.
When he wins here, I mean, there's a pretty big win. I know Terry Taylor's kind of the mid-card here, but it's a good win for him, and it's kind of moving him up the card. Funny to note that there's a young fan that won a contest to do the introduction for the match named Barry Abrams, and he's wearing a suit, but he's got like Syracuse shorts on, like with the suit. It's a weird kind of look, and I don't know why they did that, but to me it's like a guy wins a contest, you let him be the announcer for the match. I know that's so indie-rific. Don't do that at a pay-per-view. It kind of brings you down.
Here's the thing. Vince's production was light years ahead and still is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back and watch the WrestleManias, I mean, start with the first one. That first one, except for T and Hogan and Piper and Orndorff, it was just an average house show card, but they had Liberace, Billy Martin, the Rockettes, Muhammad Ali. They had Mr. T wrestling. I'm sure they had Cindy Lauper, David Wolfe. I'm sure they had a bunch of others that I can't even think of.
Yeah, Liberace, Steinbrenner was there, yeah.
Oh, yes, Liberace was the
tag. Billy Martin, yep.
Dance with the Rockettes, so, I mean, they know how to produce a big entertainment show.
And it's funny here, Greg Valentine and Terry Taylor are technically the U.S. Tag Team Champions, which is the secondary tag title that they had. Terry Taylor doesn't bring it to the ring, and JR just kind of offhandedly just mentions that, oh, yeah, by the way, the U.S. Tag Team Champs. So they're not really pumping up those titles much either, which isn't good. So, and Bagwell wins, so it doesn't make the them look too good.
Yeah, yeah.
So they cut to the back. Missy Hyatt is with Harley Race, who's actually managing Lex Luger at this point. He said Lex Luger is going to remain the champion, basically, and that he's the greatest heavyweight champion in the world. So interesting from Harley. Do you like Harley with Luger?
Yeah. I had all the admiration in the world for Harley. And I think he helped Lex. Critiqued his matches, spoke. He knew how to speak in interviews, Harley, where Lex was sort of still green and a little bit mechanical at the time. I think Harley was a good fit.
You like Vader and Harley better?
Yeah, because it lasted longer. It was that the diametrics with Luger being such a perfect specimen. I like the rougher look with Vader and Harley.
Yep. So then we have Ron Simmons is up next. He defeats Cactus Jack. Pretty good match. Goes about 6 minutes, 30 seconds. Interesting to note, kind of Junkyard Dog is out there. He's in the crowd. He's oddly wearing a white tuxedo. But he's out there in the crowd watching the pay-per-view. Ron Simmons gets the win. Then Abdul the Butcher, who kind of has an on-again, off-again relationship with Cactus Jack, which made them great kind of feuding with Sting because the unpredictability of it. Like Luger would bring out Abdullah, Luger would bring out Cactus Jack, Sting would have to deal with them. But then Jack and Abdullah didn't really get along, but they kind of did. So it was an interesting dynamic between them. Abdullah attacks Ron Simmons after the match. JYD, of course, with a shirt earlier, jumps out of crowd and helps Ron Simmons against those two animals. You like that? They're building something with JYD, Simmons, and of course Cactus Jack and the nut job Abdul the Butcher.
Yeah, I love it all. I mean, can't go wrong with any of those guys, can you?
No, nope.
Yeah.
The next matchup, not so good. Van Hammer and the Z-Man, Tom Zenk, defeated Richard Morton and Vinny Vegas. Of course, Richard Morton was... I didn't like that was him as a heel. Remember they had the York Foundation, Richard Morton, Terrence Taylor. All those guys, they would change their names to make it nice and appropriate. And I wasn't feeling Ricky Morton as Richard Morton, the heel. But this match is not very good at all, as Van Hammer and Z-Man go over in about 12 minutes. I feel like they gave him way too much time as well. You like Van Hammer and the Z-Man?
Like with him?
Do you like that team? That seems like two green guys teaming again.
No, and I don't like you. I don't like Ricky as a heel.
And obviously Vinny Vegas is Nash, but very green at this point here in 92 as well.
Yeah.
To me, just miscast Morton as a heel. It just doesn't
sound right. One of the greatest baby faces of all times.
Thomas Rich, remember he was in the New York Foundation too? They had all like the appropriate names. Wasn't buying it. Wasn't feeling it as much. Terrence Taylor, I guess, is okay, but just not Richard Morton. I mean, he's Ricky Morton.
Right.
So the next matchup, Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes defeat Steve Austin and Larry Zbyszko with Medusa. The match goes about 18 minutes and 20 seconds. Really pretty damn good match here from them, as you would expect from the four guys I mentioned. The Dangerous Alliance, of course, Steve Austin and Zbyszko were a part of with Paul Lee, but Medusa's with them there. What do you think about Dustin Rhodes and Wyndham going over a young Steve Austin and Larry Z?
Barry was a fabulous performer. So I'm sure they're doing this to come back. I'm assuming, but I don't know, to come back for house shows and give them something to put on the card that people were interested in.
They're really kind of building up Zbyszko as the cruncher. He broke Wyndham's arm. You know, he's breaking his arm at Halloween Havoc. He's doing all these things. So they're kind of building up this cruncher gimmick with him. So there's some Dustin, Wyndham, Zbyszko heat. And obviously, since Zbyszko and Austin are becoming a team together, he's a part of it as well. But it's just interesting that they were kind of going a different direction with Zbyszko, a little bit of a different gimmick, that he was like a destroyer, if you will. He was crunching guys. He was crunching their arms, breaking their arms.
Yeah, Larry's a great performer. He drew nothing but money. I just saw Larry last weekend.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was at a signing in South Florida, and he drew all that money with Bruno, one of the biggest angles they ever had.
Definitely.
And AWA champion, excuse me.
I love Larry. I talk to him every once in a while, every few months, actually. We give each other a call. Sometimes I miss the call on purpose because I know he's going to leave me an awesome voicemail. I know I always was obsessed with his announcing and some of the stuff he would say, but some of his voicemails are hilarious. I'd be like, John, and he'll go into a story about his golfing or something. So I'm like, oh, yes, what's the voicemail going to be this time? So sometimes I'll purposely miss his call just to hear an awesome voicemail. I love Larry Z. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy.
He never gives the, hey, it's Larry, give me a call back. It's usually a minute 30. It's a story to go along with it. I love it.
I don't blame you.
He's the man. They go then to Schiavone and Bischoff. Bischoff is wearing a Steiner Brothers jacket, oddly enough. Pumping up the next match, of course. They go to the back. Missy Hyatt is there, and she is with Medusa. And a guy in a ninja costume. So that's kind of interesting. What the hell is going on here? Obviously teasing something with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Rick Rude, who is going to have a match later on in the night. So we'll just leave that in your head for food for thought. Then we have Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton, who are the WWE Tag Team Champions. Awesome tag team. Defeat the Steiner Brothers, Rick and Scott, by DQ. The match goes 20 minutes, and this was a great match between these two. I love Anderson and Eden, probably the two best tag wrestlers ever, and you just throw them together.
Great idea. And I agree with you, probably the two of the best tag team wrestlers of all times. I don't think Bobby gets his due. Bobby was fabulous.
Oh, the best. Yep.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I always talk to Arn, too, and I always say the Steiner Brothers, like, oh, we never beat those guys. I got to remind him. Super Brawl 2, here, you beat them, technically. You know, they technically get the win. So, they always said they always job to the Steiners, but, hey, you got to win here. But always had awesome chemistry with them, no matter who he was teaming with.
Yeah.
Kip Allen Fry also says before the match and through Gary Michael Capetta that Paulie Dangerously, of course, of the Dangerous Alliance, is banned from ringside. So that's why he's not out there for this match. But anyway, Arn Anderson and Eden still win, even though it's by disqualification, they still win. What do you think about the Dangerous Alliance? Because a lot of people say that they may have even had the opportunity, had they been around longer, to have been better than the Horsemen.
Yeah, I find it hard. Who is going to be in the alliance?
So it was Rick Rude, Steve Austin, Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, Larry Zbyszko, Medusa, and Paulie Dangerously.
That's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah. Well, you got more guys, but an amazing group of talent there. Yeah.
Yes. Pretty hard to beat. I'll go with a coin flip.
It's funny, Arn is on both teams, so it's kind of hard with Arn, but you got to put Flair over Rude, but then you got all the other guys. You got Zbyszko and Eaton and Steve Austin, and then Paulie Dangerously as the manager, and then Medusa. Pretty damn awesome, Dangerous Alliance.
I think it is, too.
So then we have the next match, the aforementioned Rick Rude, who is the United States champion. He defeats Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in 20 minutes in another pretty damn good match. So, I mean, there's a ton of good matches on the show. It just kind of keeps rolling one good match after another here. There was some interference. And, of course, that ninja who I talked about before is ends up being Paulie Dangerously, who is banned from ringside. The ninja kind of hidden in his way around that stipulation, but Rick Rude cheats and then gets the cover and the win, and it remains your United States champion. What do you think there? Ricky Rude going over Ricky Steamboat.
I thought Rude was one of the greats in our business. I mean, he worked hard, very hard. And I got along with Rick very well. Very well.
Now, there's a lot of stories about him and him being a tough guy and stuff like that. And is that true? Like, was he like a legit tough guy? Was he a shooter? I know he was a great arm wrestler and stuff. And I've seen him in some matches stiff some guys. But, like, was he a legit tough guy?
Oh, yes. He punched like Harley Race. He didn't have to throw two. He was super tough. Out of all that crew in Minneapolis that were all tough guys, none of them could hold a candle to Rude. And I'm talking Road Warriors, Henning, Norton.
Brady Boone, John Nord.
Yeah, John Nord.
Mike Enos.
Yeah, none of them.
Wow.
None of them.
Some pretty high praise right there for Ricky Rude. And, of course, post-match, they reveal in the locker room, Paulie Dangerously was wearing the ninja costume, like I said, like you expected. Nice little swerve there. I mean, you kind of knew it was Paulie Dangerously, but a nice swerve to kind of say, oh, Kip Allen Fry said, we're, you know, banned from the building. I'm too dangerous. You know, I can't interfere in the matches. Well, we'll trick him. We'll pull a little heel maneuver on him.
Okay. So now the head of the company says you're banned from the building. Why are you on TV the next week?
Oh, true. He just outsmarted you. Yeah, you got to get suspended, right?
You just pissed on the boss's leg.
Is that one of those things where everyone just goes, it's wrestling logic?
Yeah, that's one of those things people go, it's wrestling. And I believe that too, some, because you can't throw a guy in the ropes and leapfrog and then backward leapfrog. Believe it or not, I used to do that. I mean, some of the shit you got to let go, but you're barred from the building. So next time you say you're barred from the building, you're putting up a sign that's flashing. Oh, he'll be here. He'll be here. So there's two ways to look at it. If you think that's going to help your pay-per-view, go ahead and do it. But no repercussions at all?
None.
Paul can't get a lawyer. And one of Paul's friends that a lawyer can't debate and get thrown out of court and see a judge getting a fistful of money. I don't know. That's just me.
What about Paul's dad? Paul's dad was a lawyer.
Yeah, he could have done with Paul's dad.
So the next, before we get to that, what do you think of Paulie Dangerously at this point? I know you hired him years before, but did you see his progression in the business? Did you see, like, wow, he's come a long way?
Paul was a master manipulator. And I don't say that as a bad thing. Always watched, always had good ideas. Knew how to put himself over, too.
Did you like him on the mic and doing the phone gimmick? I mean, did you like all of his gimmick stuff?
I gave him the phone gimmick, so that's my fault. I thought he was good. I thought he's excellent.
Well, how did you give him the phone gimmick?
Because when he came down, I hired him. He was dressed like a college kid. I said, nah, you need to put a sport coat or suit on. And I thought, Cornette has the racket. You need to use the phone. Cornette had the racket. Jimmy had the microphone. Missy had the brick in her purse. Everybody had something back in the day.
Makes sense. For sure. Now, the main event of the evening, Sting versus Lex Luger for the WCW Heavyweight Championship. He thinks he's leaving on a high note, but probably not. Harley Race thinks he's leaving on a high note, but probably not. To me, this was a pretty good match. Sting defeats Lex Luger, of course, like I mentioned with Harley Race, wins the championship. Match goes about 13 minutes. I thought this was pretty good, pretty suffice, kind of did what it needed to do, make Sting look strong. Luger, you know, didn't look terrible on the way out either, but, you know, it could have been a squash. I guess you could say it could have been a squash, or it could have been Sting really killing him on the way out, but it made Luger look okay. And Sting, it does the trick, and Sting wins the match.
He's leaving. Sting needs the belt.
What did you think, though, of Sting as champion? Do you like him better on the chase? Do you like him as the champion? What do you think about that?
I like him on both ends. I like him in the chase because you get a lot out of him, but you have to give it to him every once in a while so you can go back to the chase and let people know he can do it.
With Sting here as champion, he'll then kind of start a bit of a feud still, of course, with the Dangerous Alliance and Paulie Dangerously, but really kind of mainly Rick Rude, and that feud is going to come to the surface. There's this awesome, I don't know, I guess it's on YouTube somewhere. I always had it on tape from my tape trading days. There's a post-match press conference, which did they do a lot of that in WCW? I don't recall them doing too many of these.
No.
So Sting is doing this press conference afterwards. I mean, this is awesome. It comes off, and I mean, maybe I'm being a, you know, quote unquote mark or being a fanboy here, but it almost comes off a little bit of a shoot because Rude comes out and Sting's talking. It almost seems like they did it so well. It almost seems like Rude's not supposed to be there. He comes out and he goes, "Oh, Sting, I'm the number one. I should be the champion. I'm the one contender. I'm the U.S. champion. I'm next in line." And Sting's like, "Yeah, yeah, okay." And like he, I don't remember if it was a coffee or soda, but he kind of like throws it at Sting, and they break into this brawl. And it was like they're ripping their clothes off. I mean, they're like they're going at it. Like Sting was pissed. So it came off as real, but to me, it almost came off like I don't know, maybe he wasn't supposed to throw the soda in his face, like something. But it came off like, okay, now we're leaving Luger in the rear view here. Like I completely forgot he was shooting at Luger 2 minutes ago. Because him and Rick Rude are like killing each other backstage.
When you're dealing with Rick, it's a half shoot. Anyway, he's that intense. I loved him because he's that intense. Probably wasn't supposed to hit Sting with the soda.
I don't know how many people have seen it or not, but I just always, I loved it because it's just like, where did that come from? Like, wow, I know Rude's number contender, but like, wow, that was like, that escalated quickly. And I know they kind of had a little bit of feud before that, months before for the U.S. title when Rude kind of first came in, he beat Sting and stuff. But it felt like, wow, that was like something, which is great on Rude because it just, I don't know, felt a little bit real to me. It was like, that was awesome. Like, well, holy shit, like this might have been fake, but that was real. That was cool.
Well, I answered your question about Rude.
Yes.
Really a shoot. So
yeah.
What he did was look like a shoot.
Very cool. I mean, and obviously, they would feud on a bunch of house shows. There would be the big Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance at the Wrestle War 92 pay-per-view, which is the War Games. So, I mean, there was like, you know, their big blow-off here with those two feuding for a while. Sting would eventually, months later, end up feuding with Vader and taking the loss as we'd go into like a different role for Sting and Vader coming in. But to me, 92 Sting was great because Rude, he was feuding with, he had just finished a feud with Luger. He's got Vader. He's got Cactus Jack he's feuding with. I mean, he was kind of feuding with all these different guys and having good matches with everybody. That's why when people are like, Sting wasn't that good of work. Well, he can have a good match with anybody. And he made Cactus Jack and he made Vader in 1 year.
Yep. He's a great worker.
And Luger's not known as a particularly, you know, I wouldn't say he's bad at all, but he's not known as like Flair where he's carrying guys. So obviously Sting was holding his own with him as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what do you think about this pay-per-view? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
From what you've told me and I didn't see it, I'm going to go thumbs up.
To me, thumbs way up because Pillman Liger is awesome. I liked Ron Simmons and Cactus Jack. I like Wyndham and Rhodes versus Austin and Zbyszko. I loved Arn Anderson Eaton versus the Steiner Brothers. I like Rick Rude and Steamboat, and I like Sting and Luger. So if you have a pay-per-view where you pretty much – and Bagwell and Terry Taylor wasn't bad either. So if you have a pay-per-view and it's really eight matches and only one match was bad, which is Van Hammer and Z-Man – you know, Van Hammer and Z-Man kind of would expect that. I would say great pay-per-view. You know, 7 out of 8, you know, thumbs up.
I'm going with you.
WCW in 1992, kind of a mixed bag because Kip Allen Fry is there. Bill Watts comes in. The in-ring stuff is great. There's some other stuff that's not so great. Some of the rules that Watts will enforce. You like the no coming off the top rope stuff. They take the mats from the floor on the outside. Do you like that kind of stuff?
No.
What was that supposed to accomplish?
Well, he's going to go back in time. You can't do that. You have to stay current. You can't say to these group of young guys today, you're doing too much stuff. Go back and watch stuff from the late 80s, early 90s. It's a whole different world. People have grown up on video games now. It's action. Are you trying to tell me? Did you see, we've talked about the superhero movies?
Mm-hmm.
How much shit blows up? I mean, the fights last forever, right? And then not only do they last forever, I forget which superhero movie it is, and you'll tell me. I thought it was when all the Avengers joined and they were fighting thousands of people at the end.
Yeah, the Infinity War, yeah.
Yeah, come on. What are you going to go back? And Batman's going to knock a gun out of the guy's hand? Come on. You got to stay current. And that's what not only wrestling, movies, music, you know?
And it's funny because, like, Kip Allen Fry, I know he doesn't know what he's doing, but, like, for some of his pay-per-views, came off pretty well. So it's like, all right, maybe he doesn't know what he's doing, but whoever he's got booking, Ole and, you know, the other guys that are part of the committee, they kind of were in the right direction. Then they bring Watts in, and that kind of, I don't know, changes the momentum to me a bit. And I know Eric Bischoff talks about it all the time. He kind of ruined the relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling for a while. I mean, he did some stuff, you know.
We talked about this. Go to Hawaii. I told you that. And seal that deal.
Really? Couldn't go to Hawaii.
No, we went to Hawaii to seal the deal.
Yes.
And I had to bring Saito to King Curtis to get that FS done.
Yeah. And obviously, I know, I think, did Sonny Ono go with you guys too?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No.
I know years later, Eric and Sonny would go together. They'd go, you know, fly to New Japan, watch the shows and stuff.
Yeah. No, it was when Eric and I went there and met with him. Had a wonderful time with Eric there, too.
That's funny. They just, I don't know, Watts hurt the relationship. You guys had to kind of mend fences.
It's more than mend the fences. I had to pull an ace out of my pocket with King Curtis. So,
was Saito the booker, or was he just a high level?
He was the booker.
I know he wrestled too for a while. Yeah. Obviously, a legendary wrestler.
Yeah.
He was the booker over there. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know Brad Reagan's, right? He had a good relationship with Saito and
super relationship. Yeah.
All right, so let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at 2-Man Power Trip. Check the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on?
You know how I said I was with Larry? I want to give a guy a plug. I was at WCCW with Larry, and they had it was a war game type match called Game of Wars, and they had the best fence. It was a double cage I've ever seen. So if any promoter out there looking for somebody that this fence was probably 13 feet high from the apron. And I talked to the guy that made it. And he said, I don't usually do this, but the fencing company is called D&R Fencing. And I'll give the telephone number, 954-513-3764. If you're ever going to buy for a show a legitimate looking fence, the only one that looks better is Vince's Elimination Chambers. This was amazing. Amazing. And Larry and I sat and watched the match. We really enjoyed it.
What kind of fencing is it, though? What are they using that's different than everybody else?
Fence, but it was black. It was ominous.
Oh.
And it was two rings, went over two rings. It was super. And the match was great, too. They had some great talent there. So.
Did you ever like that blue fence that WWF used, the blue cage?
No, I hated it. Look like
why do they do that? So just so everyone can clearly see through the
obviously, that's what I think too.
I know. I like it looking back, but then it's like, nah, I like the traditional slam the guy in the cage fence. Yeah.
I do too. So if anybody wants to give them a call, if you ever want a fence, and it's, I mean, they put this thing up. It's two rings, right? And these guys put that fence up in 16 minutes. That's amazing.
Oh, so they did the traditional war games.
Yeah.
Two rings. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And you couldn't believe the finish, you know, like you were saying about Watts. They had, it was a 5-on-4 match, but one guy ended up, so it was 5-on-5. Gangrel was in the other ring with their champion, and he put him out, but the other guys were trying to climb, and one guy, they were like a tower, and one guy got underneath them and suplexed them all off the top.
Whoa.
I would have taken that bump, but it looked tremendous. It really did.
Wow, awesome. I like that spot.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I do too. I've never seen anything like that.
I got a buddy of mine who's a big War Games mark. He'll want to see that. Like he's seen all these random indie promotions that had War Games that they filmed. And he's seen them all. He'll probably love that as long as they have a film somewhere.
They got a film. I think it's on YouTube, I believe.
Is it CCW? Is that what it is?
CCW, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. I'll have to check that out. Yeah, it sounds awesome. I like that. I like the old-school war games. Like, WWF brought it back this year, I mean, for Survivor Series, when the Bloodline. So, I mean, I like the traditional war games.
Me too.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two or, you know, what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone. phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose Gift Code section, and input the special code TASKMASTER to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer.